We're holding on page Nun in Shabbos Ois Ein Hey. Page Nun Ois Ein Hey. We started talking yesterday about the question of what kinds of skins, what kind of animal skins can you write tefillin and other, and then Sifrei Torah and mezuzahs on. We established that it has to be on the skin of a behemoth tahor. So more on that topic. The Gemara says, "Shol by tusi echadus Rabbi Yeshua Hagarsi." A certain by tusi asked Rabbi Yeshua Hagarsi. So we know you had the tzedukim and the by tusim. The followers of Tzaduk and Baitus, the Talmidim of Antigonus Sersoi, who they or their Talmidim, according to different explanations, misinterpreted what Antigonus said in Pirkei Avos about when he says, don't be like slaves who serve their master in expectation of reward, but serve without the expectation of reward. He meant, in other words, do l'shem shemayim. They misunderstood, or their Talmidim misunderstood, to mean that there is no schava onesh, and they created whole movements of Jews called Tzedukim and Baitusim, respectively, who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. So now, where Baitusi asked Rabbi Yeshua Hagarsi, who was one of the Talmudim of Rabbi Akiva, he says, "Minayin she'en kosvin tefillin al gabei or behemoth tmei." How do we know that you can't write tefillin on the skin of a non-kosher animal? So Rabbi Yeshua answers him, "Dichtiv," because the pasuk says, we learned this yesterday, "L'man tia Torah Hashem b'ficha," in order that the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth, which implies "midaver hamutar b'ficha." It has to be written on something that's allowed to be placed in your mouth. So the Baitutsi asks, Elamai Ata, by that logic, Al Gabi Ur Nevelus Atrefis Al Yukosvu, then you shouldn't be able to write them on the skins of kosher animals, of animals of kosher species that are Nevelus Atrefis, because those you're not allowed to eat. And the fact is, the halacha is you are allowed to write on such skins. Omalei, so Rabbi Yeshua answers him, Em Shalacha Moshe Lama Deva Doimer. I'll give you an analogy what it's like. Lebeis Bene Odim Shneschaibu Harigul Malchus. Imagine you have two people who were liable to be executed by the government. Echad Hoga Melech, one of them, the king himself, kills him. The Echad Hoga Isplakliter, and the other one, the executioner, kills him. Eze Mehen Meshubach, so which one obviously is on a higher level? Heviem Ezesha Hoga Melech, the one whom the king killed. So in other words, so to speak, the Nevelo Trefa that was killed by natural processes, meaning by Hashem directly, is, so to speak, on a higher level than the one that was shechted. Now, Tosfos says, Tosfos points out, I mean, it's not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos in the Gemara points out, so that explains if it was a nevela, for example, if it died naturally. What if, for example, if it died by human agency but without being shechted? We know any other method of killing an animal without shechita makes it nevela. Nevertheless, Tosfos says, once we've established that nevelas that are killed directly by Hashem are in a way more important than their skins can be used for tefillin and mezuzahs and so forth, then yes, the same thing is going to apply across the board to any nevelas, even the ones where Rabbi Yeshua's mashal doesn't exactly work. So the guy asks, Elamei Ata Ye'ochlu. Well, by that logic, if you're saying that nevelas and trefas are more important, then you should be able to eat them. Omalei, so Rabbi Yeshua tells him, what are you talking about? Atoda Omer, let's say who call nevela. The Torah says flat out, you're not allowed to eat any nevela. Va'ata Amre, va'ata Amarti Yechelu, and you say Ye'ochlu, and you're saying you should be able to eat them. Omalei, so the Baitusi says, Kalos, beautiful. Kalos is a Greek word meaning beautiful, like you have an English word like calligraphy and whatnot that descend. So what's going on over here with this debate, and why is it in Ein Yaakov? So Akosif gives an explanation like this. The gist of it is, he's saying, first of all, why does the Gemara make a point of saying the guy was a Baitusi? Usually when you have such stories, you have Shah Goyechad or Shah Minechad or whatever. Here, the Gemara makes a specific point of mentioning that the guy was a Baitusi. Why? So the reason is, because after all, we know the Baitusim, they do believe in Torah Shabbat, they do believe in keeping the mitzvahs of it. In fact, there are people who say, between the Tzedukim and the Baitusim themselves, there are historians who want to say that the Tzedukim were more the ones that were interested in political power and didn't really care for the mitzvahs, except as they could use them as a vehicle for their ambitions, whereas the Baitusim were, sort of, so to speak, the more frum ones among them who actually cared about mitzvahs just according to their corrupted understanding of it. Anyway, so when Rabbi Shur gives him the answer, so the Baitusi thinks that the proper way to understand Torah is as much as possible as it fits with human seichel. So Rabbi Yeshua explains to him that no, the bottom line is, of course, it's true. We have to try to find as much as possible to try and find rational reasons for the mitzvahs that we'll understand. And when we have a mitzvah that it's hard to understand the reason for, try to figure out what we can understand about the mitzvah that will make it more meaningful to us. But after all is said and done, we got to have Kabbalah soil. Hashem says, this is the mitzvah, then that's it. Then there's no, ultimately, there's no question in that. So if it says flat out in the Torah, you can't eat nevela, then there's nothing to talk about. On the other hand, when it comes to tefillin, the Torah doesn't actually say in so many words that it has to be from a kosher animal. All it says is l'mantia teres Hashem reficha, and we darshin from it that it means that it has to be from a kosher animal. So therefore, we have the right to use human logic to use, like Rabbi Yeshua's mashal about the two people executed by the government, to say, therefore, that in a way, nevelos and treifos are more important, and therefore, that if you can use the skins of shechted animals for tefillin, then how much more so these? So therefore, the guy is very impressed by that, and he says, kalos, he says, very good, beautiful, because Rabbi Yeshua made an excellent point to him that he can understand that it's true. You have to try to understand the Torah rationally, but at the same time, you also have to realize what Hashem says is there's no questioning that. You can try to understand it, but you still have to accept that it's a given. This is what Hashem says, and there's no playing around. Page nine, bottom paragraph. Okay. Further on in the perek, it talks about dinim, it mentions a din in a Mishnah about dinim, about making salt water on Shabbos. The problem is that if you make salt water, then either it's the kind of mixture of salt water that's often used for tanning skins. So therefore, you're making it then as a preparation for that malacha, or it's a tolda of that malacha, or it looks like you're preparing for something for after Shabbos or whatever. So therefore, the Mishnah talks about dinim of making salt water on Shabbos, that if you're going to make it, it has to be basically very weak salt water. This is negei lahalacha, when Pesach comes out on Shabbos. If you didn't make the salt water before Yom Tov, then you can make it on Yom Tov, but you have to make it in a very weak consistency.
Also with a shinui or no?
You don't have to make it with a shinui, but you have to make it in a very weak consistency, okay, not very much salt. Anyway, so in this connection, the Gemara brings a couple of braises with statements by Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva, one of them about salt water and another one about, about salting certain kinds of vegetables on Shabbos, whether you're allowed to or not. And then there's a third one over here, which is here in Ein Yaakov. Tony Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva, esrog tznoinu beitza, an esrog, a radish, and an egg, ilmole kliposin achitzoina, if it weren't for their outer shell, they would never leave the stomach. In other words, an esrog, the pulp of an esrog, or the inside of the flesh of a radish, or as far as the egg, Rashi explains that what we mean is the yolk of the egg as opposed to the white. So an egg has a shell, of course, but here we're not talking about the external shell. We're talking about the white of the egg compared to the yolk. That can be called the shell of the egg. And we're using that expression because the other ones literally have a shell, have a rind. So therefore, uses that same expression as far as the egg as well. So in other words, the inside of them is very difficult to digest, only because they have an outer layer, the esrog, the radish, and the egg. Only because of that is it possible to digest them, and eventually they get out of the stomach. Actually, Ben Yehoyada points out on the face of it just the opposite. Egg yolk is very easy to digest. So he says just the opposite. He means as far as the egg yolk, he means as far as the other two, fine. It means exactly that. They would never leave the stomach. They'd never get fully digested were it not for the fact that the outer rind of them has, it's got fiber, and therefore it helps it move through your system. In the case of the egg, he says the other way around. If you were to eat an egg yolk by itself, it's such concentrated nutrition, there wouldn't be any waste from it at all. Only because you eat it together with the white, and the white is not fully digestible, therefore it ends up producing waste and exiting the body. Okay. Fine. Further on, the Gemara continues talking about this matter of salt water and the various consistencies and strengths of salt water. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions ki osir of dimi, here talking about another kind of salt water, the Dead Sea. Ki osir of dimi omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, me'olam le'tova gavra b'yama b'sdoim. Nobody ever drowned in the Sea of Sdoim, meaning the Dead Sea, because the salt content over there is so high that people float in it. But Rabbi Yosef says the way that Rabbi Dimi phrased it sounds very strange. Hafucha Sdoim v'hafucha mili. The Sdoim was turned upside down, and it sounds like the statements that are being made about Sdoim are also upside down. What are you saying? You're saying that no person ever drowned there. It sounds like you're implying Gavrohu Delay Tava, no person ever drowned in the Dead Sea, Kshura Tava. But it sounds like you're saying that a beam, a wooden beam, would sink in there, but it doesn't. So you should say nothing sinks in the Dead Sea. Abai says, you're right. That is what he means. Loy miboya karma. He's saying, needless to say. Loy miboya kshura. Needless to say, a plank of wood. That won't sink in any kind of water, whether salty or not, because it's fairly light and buoyant. Ela filo gavra, but even a person, the tava b'chomemis shabolam, a person might drown in any other body of water. B'yama disturb loytava, it will be impossible for him to drown in the Dead Sea because the salt content will make him float. Habona points out an interesting point over here. You find that the Dor HaMabul, the people were killed with water. On the other hand, with Sodom, it was the opposite. The people were punished and killed with fire that rained down on them from Shemayim. So therefore, in keeping with that, the water that you find over there, the water of the Dead Sea, which covers the site of where Sodom was, that it's impossible for that water to drown anybody. Like you have, their punishment is the polar opposite of the Mabul, where nobody can possibly drown in their water. Hashem made it so salty that it'll support a person's weight. If the only way a person is going to be killed in that area would be like the people of Sodom who were killed with fire. Okay. Further on, the Gemara continues talking about so in this connection, the Gemara goes on to mention a halacha that emerges from this point about the Dead Sea, about the salt content in the Dead Sea, that has to do with Hilchos Shabbos, about whether you're allowed to apply that water to your eyes or to other parts of your body. You wouldn't want to put it on your eyes, things, but apparently there are certain kinds of conditions where there's certain kinds of eye conditions where apparently it's good for them. Anyway. So the Gemara discusses whether you're allowed to do that. In general, there's a gzeira d'rabbanan that you're not allowed to do medicinal things on Shabbos with certain exceptions. So the Gemara deals with that. Anyway, then the Gemara goes on to talk about other kinds of cures for the eyes. So in particular, the Gemara talks about kilur, which is some kind of ointment or salve or whatever that they used to put on their eyes in those days to cure various kinds of eye diseases. So the Gemara says, Sholach Rab Yanai la Ma'ukva. So Rab Yanai sent him, who was from Eretz Yisrael, sent a message to Ma'ukva, and he asked him, Lishadol lon mar mehanach kiloren demar Shmuel. Ma'ukva, please send me some of the kiloren, some of the eye ointments that Mar Shmuel used to use. Mar Shmuel, Shmuel the Amora, we know we had in yesterday's Gemara, and you have in various places in Shas, was an expert doctor. So he had various preparations of kilor that are good for various kinds of eye diseases, and Rabbi Yanai wants some of them. Ma'ukva, in particular, we know had a very close association with Shmuel. The Gemara mentions elsewhere in Shas that Ma'ukva was a Talmud of Shmuel, and on the other hand, he was also the Av Beis Din of the Beis Din in the Haudah, and Shmuel was a member of that Beis Din. So Gemara mentions elsewhere that when they were learning as Rebbe and Talmud, then Ma'ukva would sit 4 amos away from Shmuel out of respect, and when they were sitting on the Beis Din, then the other way around, Shmuel would sit with respect in front of Ma'ukva. Anyway, so Rabbi Yanai knows, therefore, that if Shmuel has kiloren available, then Ma'ukva can supply him with some. Shalachle, so he sent him back a message. Shaduri meshadavnalach, sure, I'll send them to you. Deloitemat sar ainano, I don't want you to think that I'm stingy and I don't want to give them away. Ella, but you should know what's better than that. Hochi amar Shmuel, you should know that actually Shmuel said, Toiva tipat sonen shachris, it's better when you wash your hands with a little bit of cold water in the morning, or rechitzes yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin arvis, and washing your hands and feet in hot water in the evening, that kind of thing is better for your eyes, mikol kilodon shavolam, more than all the ointments in the world, more than all the kilodon and ointments in the world. So yeah, by all means, I'll send you some, but you should know that you really don't need the ointments, you just need this kind of thing. And the Gemara says, Tanya nami hochi. In fact, we learn in a braisa that says just that. And the Braisa continues, Hu Haya Omer, Rav Huna or Rav Moina used to say in the name of Rav Yehuda, you have to be very careful about touching parts of your body before you wash your hands. Yad la'ayin, if a person touches his hand to his eye, he cuts it, he'd be better off if his hand was cut off, because there's a ruach ra on his hands before he washes, and that can cause him to go blind.
Talking about what?
Talking about before Negrovah, so in the morning.
In the morning, like yeah. Bed, yeah.
Yeah. Similarly, yad l'chotem tikotzitz. If a person touches his nose before he washes negovaser, same thing. He would be better off with his hand cut off because it's going to cause him diseases in his nose. Yad l'peh tikotzitz. The same thing to the mouth. Yad l'ozen tikotzitz. The same way if he touches his hand to his ear. Yad l'chasuda tikotzitz. The same way if he touches a place on his body where there's a scar or a wound from bloodletting. So there also you have like an open area where germs or whatever can get in, or a ruach ra can get in and cause problems. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions about this one and a couple of the other ones that are here on the list that we're not only talking before Negovaser, we're also talking at other times also, even throughout the day, to touch an area like that is likely to introduce germs and other things like that into the body through the open hole of there. The yad la'ama tikotzitz. Similarly, also if the hand touches the ama, the male organ, then also it's better if it's cut off. So again, here Rashi says that actually you have two possibilities. One is we mean before negovaser. The other is we mean all the time. The Gemara mentions in Nida and sporadically here and there in Shas that a man is not allowed to touch that part of his body because it may cause him to hirur and it may cause him to be motzi zedel l'batala. So therefore, so here we're saying, not only before Negovaser, but even at other times like that as well. So in fact, Eitz Yosef discusses it a little bit and says that after all, maybe we could be talking about, he brings from El Yerabah on the Levush, who mentions a couple of possibilities. First of all, the Gemara in those places mentions there is a certain heter to touch it at a certain part, like the tip of it, where it's not going to cause hirhorim. And also you have a certain heter. The Gemara mentions over there, technically, a married man has more of a heter too, because he anyway has pas v'salo. He has a wife that he has the ability to satisfy his urges with. So therefore, there's less of an issue. Nevertheless, though, so then we're still saying, then you still have the issue that they shouldn't be touching it before he washes negovaser.
Yeah, also brings the anus.
Yeah, that's the next one over here. Yad l'pitabas tikotzit. The next one is to touch the anus. Right. And again, the same idea. One point on one level we can be talking about before washing negovaser. On another level, we can be talking about just in general, and it brings in Shulchan Aruch, it causes a person to develop hemorrhoids. Actually, the Gemara is going to mention over here that the Gemara doesn't mention over here. The Gemara mentions other things, but whatever. And Shulchan Aruch mentions that touching that area too much can cause a person to develop hemorrhoids. Yeah. And finally, yad l'gigis tikotzitz, and finally the hand that touches the gigis, which is a gigis, is a barrel where they brew beer. Also tikotzitz, it would be better if it gets cut off because again the ruach ra on the hands is going to damage the beer. Here also you have the Oruch gives an explanation that what it means is if a person is brewing beer, he would do well to keep his hands away from it because if he starts drinking it, then he's drinking away all his profits. Anyway, so he finishes off yad misane, the eye, that the hand that touches the eyes before washing negovaser can cause them to become blind. Yad machareshes, the hand that touches the ear before negovaser can cause the person to become deaf. Yad malapulipus, and the hand touching the mouth or the nose can cause a person to develop pulipus, which the Gemara in Ksubas explains, and actually brings it over here, means a condition that causes a person to have bad breath or bad smell coming from their nose. Bapashtos, the word is related in English, you have the word polyp, like a type of growth. So bapashtos, it means like a growth that causes a bad smell. Anyway, so the point is you have to wash negovaser before touching those things.
These are just possibilities of what could happen, right? But what about the non-from people? They don't know from this.
Right. I mean, I guess, right. We're talking about if a person knows better, right. Yeah. So Tanya, Rav Gamliel, or Rav Nosson Omer, Bas Choren Hizu, this Ruach Ra that rests on a person's hands before he washes his Negovaser is a Bas Choren. It's like a free lady, like a very important, Marsha brings from the Aruch, it means like a very important lady, like a Ben Choren would be a very important person. So a Bas Choren is the same thing. So it's like a very important, finicky kind of ruach, the ena umakpedes, and it's makbed, it won't go away, adshi yuchetz yodav, gimel pomim, until a person washes his hands three times. That is why for negovaser in the morning, we wash three times. And even, you know, when it comes to washing for bread, you have different minhagim, whether you wash two or three times on each hand, or minag taka is three, but the velt wash is only two. But negovaser in the morning, it's universal to do three on each hand based on this gemara. Benayahu brings in, Benayahu a couple of other possibilities of what Ben Chur, of what Bas Churin means. He said the word Churin also means a hole. So it can mean that this Ruach Ra is very insidious, like a snake that hides out in holes, and it can also mean that it tends to infest holes in the body, which is why we're saying that touching the eyes or the nose or the mouth or wound from bloodletting or whatever is particularly dangerous, because those are all holes into the body, and therefore it has special affinity for those.
What's insidious?
Insidious means like tricky, gets in there, it worms its way in there, kind of. Anyway, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says in this connection, Puch Mavri Basmelech. If a person puts Puch, which is a kind of eyeshadow, on his eyes, Mavri Basmelech, that will take away the effect of this Basmelech, which is basically another name for the Bas Churin that we just said. Meaning, in other words, if a person did, he touched his hands before washing Negobas, and now his eyes are aching because of it, let him put some Puch on his eyes, and that will help cure them. Also, Puch is good for a person's eyes to make them stop tearing. And it also helps the eyelashes grow long, which, after all, those are important for the normal functioning of the eye. They help keep out dust and dirt and whatever. So therefore, in other words, he's saying puch is a good thing for your eyes if you're having eye trouble.
What is it exactly? Does puch show?
Some kind of powder that they used to use in those days as like an eye shadow. They used to use it as a cosmetic. We find places in Tanakh where women wore it as a cosmetic, but also it was also used for medicinal purposes, as Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here. Further on, the Mishnah talks about the general rule. When it comes to eating or drinking medicinal things on Shabbos, the basic rule is this something that healthy people will eat or drink as well? If so, then you're allowed to eat or drink it on Shabbos, even though you're doing it for the therapeutic purpose. As opposed to if it's something that people don't usually eat or drink, unless they're sick, then not. So to put it in modern terms, for example, let's say you'd be able to have a glass of tea on Shabbos because people drink tea when they're healthy as well. On the other hand, let's say if they take medicine, that not, because most kinds of medication the person doesn't take unless they're not feeling well. Yeah, there was an interesting discussion among the poskim achronim about aspirin, because some people take it on a regular basis even when they're not sick. So is that allowed, or maybe not? But other kinds of things like other kinds of painkillers and whatnot. You'll have the rules only if the person's whole body feels sick, or he's confined to bed, or if he's taking a regular course, let's say he's taking several days worth of antibiotics, and then Shabbos comes in the middle, whatever. So you have halachas about it. Anyway, so the bottom line about the aspirin is it depends which posik you ask.
What?
It depends which rav you ask.
Oh.
Yeah.
If you have a migraine.
If you have a migraine, that's different, because that's then you're allowed to take any kind of medication. Yeah, we're talking about you have some people that take aspirin on a daily basis because supposedly it helps against heart attacks. So yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the Mishnah mentions among the things that you're allowed to eat on Shabbos or drink on Shabbos, v'shoisin abuv roya. You're allowed on Shabbos to drink abuv roya, a concoction made from a certain kind of plant. So the Gemara says, my abuv roya chumtaria. So it's called in Aramaic, it's called chumtaria. My chumtaria, what is it? Chutri yechida, a single stick. Meaning Rashi describes it's a kind of tree that doesn't have branches. So therefore it was known to be a good medicine, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, but it is something that healthy people will drink as well. Therefore, you're allowed to drink it on Shabbos, even if you personally are doing it for medicinal purposes. So the Gemara says, L'mai abula. So what would people drink abuv roya for? L'giluya. If they had drunk water or wine or what have you that was left uncovered, and we find in many places in Shas that a snake might have drunk from it and injected venom into it. So if a person drunk such a liquid, then it'll help them. A good antidote for it will be to drink a preparation made from abuv roya. Abuv roya, we're saying, is a kind of tree. The pastures, they would boil up a piece of wood from the tree, like make a tea out of it and drink that. The Gemara continues, v'iloi, if not, meaning either the person tried it or it didn't work, or he can't get a hold of abuv roya, then here's an alternative. Lesi chamsha klili, he should take 5 roses, v'chamsha kustza de shikra, and 5 cups of beer. v'nishlokinu b'hadi adodi, cook that mixture all together, add the kaima anapka until it gets reduced down to an anapka, which Rashi says is a revius. So he started with 5 cups of beer and 5 roses, but each cup is a revius, but you're boiling it down until you have a very thick concentrate, which is only a revius. And more, the rest of the water is boiled away. Vinishte, and then you drink that, and that'll be a good antidote for this water that may have venom. So the Gemara tells us, the mother of Rabbi Chadboi Bar Ami, she prepared a similar concoction for a certain person, but in her case, it was chad klila, 1 rose, v'chad kusa d'shikra, and d'shikra, and 1 cup of beer. And what she did is shoka, she boiled them together, the ishkise, and she gave him to drink. But then, now, it's only 1 as opposed to 5, so how much good would it do? So what she did is, v'shogra tanura, then she fired up the oven, v'garafke, then she raked out the coals, so or you still have the heat in the oven, but not any coals that a person might get burned on, v'usvise lebinsa begave. And she put a brick inside the oven so that the guy will have a place to sit on inside there and not get burnt because the brick won't be quite so hot. And now he sat on there, but he's still in the heat of the oven. And the heat, together with having drunk this, the weaker version of this concoction, the nafa kohutziyarka, the poison came out of him like a green leaf. So in other words, like he threw it all up and it came out like a huge green thing came out of him, showing that was all the poison that he vomited up. So in other words, we're saying you don't necessarily need 5 roses and 5 cups of beer. It's enough if you have 1 and 1 combined together with the heat of an oven. The Gemara continues with other possibilities. Reb Ivya says another alternative is you can drink a revius of milk from a white goat. Reb Huna Bar Yehuda Amar, Lasi Esrog Gechalisa, take a sweet esrog, Vilachaike, carve out the inside of the esrog, so all you have left is the wine. Vilimalia Dufsha, fill up this hollowed out esrog with honey. Place it where you have the fiery coals, where you have fiery coals. In other words, so now the rind of the esrog is going to cook together with the honey. And then you eat it, and that's also good for if you drank uncovered water. The Gemara continues. Reb Chanina Omar, here's something else that you can use for a number of different purposes. Meira glayim bnei aboyim yorin. Urine that is 40 days, Rashi gives 2 explanations. One is that it's 40 days old, meaning it's been fermenting all that time. Or Rashi's second explanation is it comes from a 40-day-old baby. Anyway, so that kind of urine, barzina, so if a person drinks a small cup of it, like a kelishkul of it, lizibura, that is an effective cure for somebody who was stung by a wasp. Rivi'ah, if he drinks a revius of it, is good la'akrava if he was stung by a scorpion. If he drinks a half of a lug for it, it actually explains that. So riva means a lug because a lug is 1/4 of a cab. So if he drinks 2 revius, which is a half a lug of that, then that'll be good. Legiluya, if he drank this uncovered wine or water or whatever that a snake injected venom into, and riva, and if he drinks a full lug of that, after the lakshof and malu, then it's even effective, even if he was harmed by black magic, that somebody did black magic against him, he drinks a full lug of this made up wine, then it'll do him good. A lot of these medicinal things that the Gemara says, we talked about this previously in the 6th Perek, we can't do them nowadays because we don't know the exact details. The Gemara sometimes leaves out details of a concoction, or sometimes we don't even know, like here you have, it actually is giving 2 different explanations, what it means, ben aboyim yoyim, so therefore we can't do it. The Ma'aril says already we can't, because if we try, and also there's the fact that nishtanu ativim, people's natures are different, and if we try them and it turns out and then they don't work, then people are going to end up doubting that what the Chachamim say is true. So we learn them, they have deeper ideas in them, although in this particular case, I haven't found even Peshet Agadah, who a lot of times explains a lot of these Gemaras symbolically, even he doesn't seem to deal with it much. The Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan says in this connection, a nigroin, anigroin, which is basically beet soup. So the Gemara mentions that in a few places in Shas, it's basically soup made from beets that also has oil mixed into it. So that the avangar, and also avangar, which is a soup that bangari, Rashi says, a certain type of herb named bangari was cooked in this soup. The tiryaka, and also tiryaka, which there's a couple of possibilities. In some other places, Rashi explains that tiryaka is tsori, which is balsam, like we have in the ingredients of the tortoise. Other Rishonim say that tiryaka, in English it's called theriak, is a concoction that they had in those days that they used to use against snake bites and against a number of other things. It had a bunch of different ingredients in it, and it was the Rambam mentions it in a few places in his writings, for example, and so forth. Anyway, so those kinds of things, Rabbi Yechanan says, malu ben legiluya ben lekshafim, those kinds of things are good for a person, whether he's suffering from the effects of having drunk liquid that was left uncovered and that a snake injected venom into, or whether he was harmed by kshafim. Either way, these things, anigron or avanga or tiryaka, are all very good antidotes to that. Okay, continuing on the topic of people who were harmed by snakes, the Gemara says, Haiman de bolachivya, if a person swallowed a snake, and now there's the problem that now the venom is going to be inside him, loichli kshus abimilcha, what you should do is feed him kshus with salt. Kshus is a plant, the Gemara mentions here and there in Shas, that it was used to make beer. Rashi, in a number of places, translates it as hops. Even now, they have that beer, many, many kinds of beer, if not all of them, are flavored with hops. Anyway, so you feed him that mixed with salt, vilohate, tlos a mili, and make him run 3 mil. And the point of it is that all of that, the extra heat that all that generates in his body will help kill the snake before it can cause any damage.
Chivya is another name for snake.
Chivya is an Aramaic word for snake, yeah. Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, so the Gemara tells, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi chazilahu gavra the bola chivya. In fact, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi once saw a person where that happened to him, swallowed a snake. Idmi le kiparsha, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi pretended in the guy's presence as if he was a knight, as if he was a soldier riding on a horse. Because Rashi explains that way he would scare him in there, and then the fear would be the extra thing, would also raise the guy's internal temperature, and therefore that would help get rid of the snake. He forced him to eat kshus with salt, like we said. He made him run 3 mil in front of him. 3 mils is somewhere around 2 miles. The nafik mine guvi guvi, and sure enough, the snake came out of the guy in pieces. So in other words, the extra heat that all that generated inside the guy's body, it not only killed the snake, it broke it up into pieces, but then the guy vomited up or whatever. Ikadamri, or others say, Rav Shimon Ba'ashi balachivya. Others say it wasn't that Rav Shimon Ba'ashi saw somebody that happened to, he himself swallowed a snake. Also, Elio idmilei kaparsha, and Elio anovi came and then appeared in his presence like a knight on a horse. And it came out of him in pieces. So according to the first version of Shimi Ba'ashi, did that for somebody else. According to the second version, Elio anovi did that for Rav Shimi Ba'ashi. Okay. The Gemara continues. Haiman the tauke chivya. If somebody was bitten by a snake, Lacey Ubra de Chamra Chivauti, he should take the embryo of a white donkey, Vilikare, and tear it across, Velois Veilave, and then put it on the wound, put it on the bite. Bahani Mili de Leishtakach Trefa. Now that would work only if the mother didn't turn out to be a Trefa. So the Gemara tells, Hahu Barkasha de Pumbadissa. There was a bar kasha in Pumbedissa, and Rashi explains that a bar kasha is a munal melech, an official of the government. And as we're going to see from the continuation of the Gemara, he was a yid. So he lived.
That part about the mother being a trait. What happened here?
In other words, we're saying that the mother that you're taking this mother donkey that you're taking this embryo from this cure, if the mother is a trefa, then it won't work. It has to be that the mother is completely healthy and doesn't suffer from any of the defects that would mean, obviously, by donkey, trefa is meaningless. The donkey is non-kosher anyway, but we mean if it has any of the 70 conditions that the Rambam lists that would make an animal a kosher animal, not kosher, then if the mother is suffering from one of them, then this won't work. So the Gemara is saying, Ahu bar kasha to Pumbedisa. There was a certain Bar Kasha, a certain government official in Pumbedisa, the Tauke Chivya, where a snake bit him. Have a place of Hamori Chivauta Pumbedisa. Now, there were 13 white donkeys in Pumbedisa, so it should be easy to find a cure for him. Inu Lakulu, so each one of them, they took the unborn baby from it and ripped it open. Vishnachu Trefa, but each one, it turned out the mother was Trefa, so therefore it's not working. Now, then there was one more on the other side of Pumbedisa, Ad Asli Maisila, but by the time they went to get it, Ochla Arya, a lion ate up that mother, so therefore they didn't have that one available either. So what's going on over here? Omalahu Abaya, Duma Chivya, Dirabonan Tauke, Dilesle Asusa. Maybe this guy wasn't stam bitten by a snake. Maybe he was bitten by a snake as a result of being over on a nidui of the Chachamim. So why is it we're not able to find a refuah for him? Is because we're not just talking a regular snake bite. He's guilty of violating something that the Chachamim said. Which Tosfos points out, we have a different example with Gemara and Avodah Zarah about a nephew of Rabbi Shmuel who was bitten by a snake and was not over on Divrei Chachamim and then passing away from it. The Gemara says over there, he asked Rabbi Shmuel, there was a certain min at that time who was known to be a good healer of these things. And Rabbi Shmuel tells him, don't go to this min because you may be influenced by him. And Ben Dama listens and he passes away. And Rabbi Shmuel praises him for the fact that he wasn't over al Divrei Chachamim. So we see fakert, that a person is over al Divrei Chachamim, when a person is not over al Divrei Chachamim, he can also be die, he dies from a snake, right? Tosfos says the difference is over here that in the case of Ben Dama over there, there was no remedy available at the time, only if he went to this min. Here, the remedy was available. You had 13 or 14 donkeys in town that from which they could take an embryo and use it. Every one of them, it turned out as trefa, and one of them was eaten by a lion, so that shows that it was mina shamay. So dechtivu poritz godu yishchenu nachash. As the pasuk says, the one who breaks through the fence, meaning when the chachamim put a fence around the Torah, asusiyag v'Torah, a snake will bite him. So Abaya is saying maybe that's what's going on over here. Abaya was the Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedisa. Amri lay, so they said yes, ain Rebbe. Yes, Rebbe, you're right. That is exactly what happened. Because when Rav passed away, this is many years earlier, Gozer Rabbi Yitzchok by Bisna or Bisna, Rabbi Yitzchok by Bisna made a gzera, Deloy Limte also begid me lebehi lulav batavla, that they should not bring hadassim and lulav branches together with a tambourine in front of the chosin and kala. So Rashi explains that the simcha of a chosin kala at a wedding, they would usually bring these things. They would usually bring hadassim and palm branches together with the, and then they would also, while they're bringing them in front of the chos and kala, they'd be playing tambourines and shaking tambourines to make a simcha. But here, now, as a result, because Rav passed away, Rabbi Yitzchok bar Bisna made a rule for a while that they shouldn't do that for a period of time. This guy was over on that, and he did. So sure enough, so sure enough, the snake bit him, and he died. So that's why there was no remedy available for him, because it wasn't just Bendera Chateva, it was a result of him being over on that Zera of Rabbi Yitzchok bar Bisna. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chofei Yer. We talk about the Suda of the Tzedikim, about the flesh of the Levyasan. So the Rebbe talked about that it'll be a physical Suda. So we know there are all kinds of Ruchnistic ideas represented in it. The Tzemach Tzedek brings in Sefer Alikutim and so forth. So you have the deeper meaning, but the deeper meaning of the Levyasan and the Shor HaBor and the Yayin HaMeshumer, there will be also a physical Suda. Because we know that the ultimate schar of Yemos Mashiach is not in Gan Eden. We're in Gan Eden, as the Gemara says, there's no eating and drinking. The ultimate schar is going to be in the world after Tchias HaMesim, Neshamas in Gufim, the way that Ramban holds, and then Tertus Chassidus agrees with the Ramban on that. So therefore, there has to be a physical Suda, and therefore that's in the Suda of Rav Yosin, and so forth, is going to be an actual physical Suda. Halacha. If a person sees a chacham gadol b'Torah versus a great scientist or whatever. So now, if a person sees a goyish king, then he says the bracha shenasin mekvod l'boss of Adam. This is even if he doesn't see the actual king himself. He sees the covered and he knows the king is there. As you have the story in Brachas that we learned a while back, where Rav Sheshes was blind, but he realized the moment when the king is passing by because the soldiers are walking quietly, and he still said the bracha. So he says a blind person would say without shame of malchus, although the Altadeva says he can say with shame of malchus. It's a mitzvah to go see the cupboard of kings. However, if you saw him one time, then don't waste time from your learning to see him again, unless he comes with a bigger army and a bigger cupboard than before. Whether you say the bracha on many kings that you have nowadays who don't necessarily have the powers that olden time kings do, or for that matter, do you say it on a president or whatever that, you actually have different opinions among the poskim whether you do. And the general rule is if they have the power of life and death, then they're considered a king. So the question is, for example, to what extent do they have that power? They may not exercise it, but do they have it in principle? The president, for example, can pardon somebody, but he can't, on the other hand, he can't condemn somebody to death. Is that enough maybe to say that you should say the bracha on him? So you'll find different rabbanim that take different views on it.
Does that include the king Melech HaMashiach?
Melech HaMashiach is something else. Jewish kings, he's not mentioning over here, but for the same way as we said yesterday, that for Chachmei HaTorah, that for Jewish Chachamim, you say Shecholak Mechachmasi V'Yireyav, the same way for a Jewish king, you say Shecholak Mekvoider V'Yireyav. So yes, when we see Mashiach, that will be one of, the Rebbe once talked about, actually, there's a number of brachas we're going to say when Mashiach comes, and that's going to be one of them, yes.
Right. Very nice.